Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I have an SMB online, Dead Come Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have Talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. And if you need to participate on the web, just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for quality 17702. And remember to bring your Chrome or Chromium-based browser with you, because other ones don't work. And, of course, you can also listen to our wonderful stream on twitch.tv at twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. And, of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my account there is sfuoncall. And, of course, I have a personal account called Paul Franz, where I talked about the Orioles and baseball and being Catholic and also technology because I love tech. And, of course, this lovely Talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various feeds around the net, including YouTube. I do post YouTube videos. So if you want to actually watch my lovely mug, I'm not sure you'd want to, but you never know. And when it comes to news from A to B this week, it's pretty much crickets. So I haven't heard much there, not much going on at the moment. I'm sure they're working hard. I'm sure they're working hard though. Moving on to the online tournament, the Sapphire Star 5 tournament. We have currently only two opening slots left. So if you want to be part of the tournament, sign up now. And of course, you need to pay your $10 entry fee. And so before those slots get filled up, moving onward and forward to the library, there's no progress when it comes to the conversion. I still need to talk to Frank about the background images that I have from ADB. So the complete conversion still is at 75.94%. And the FedCom library progress, we actually have more progress on that. It's just I have not had a chance to actually process those ships. And a reminder, next week there will be no podcast. I have some little surgery happening next week on Thursday, so I'm not going to be available. Whether it's supposed to be outpatient, but they said, you know, there's a 1% chance I might have to stay at the hospital overnight. You know, it's just gallbladder surgery. So no big deal. And just, you know, but they said I'll be probably pretty tired for the next 3 days afterwards. So just a reminder that there will be no podcast on July 2nd, but there will be a podcast on July 9th. I will be back in this seat. If that changes, I will be telling people via Facebook, via Twitter, you know, any place else. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one, the old Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, it's just me and Gary, and Dave's here too in the chat room. Hey, Dave. And of course, if you're on Twitch, listen, and I'll be happy to respond to anything in the chat. I will monitor the chat as best as I can. I think I've been doing pretty well though. Lately, the chat's been kind of quiet as of late. But in my mind, that does not really matter, does it not? But the original topic for tonight, well, that kind of went out the window because the idea was Carnivon. But with Barry's thoughts, well, Barry's not going to be here because he had a family emergency. So he was unable to attend. I hope it's not critical. Last time I talked to him, there was a minor issue with his mother being very sick. But, you know, I'm hoping that she'll get better. But moving on forward, let's, on a brighter note, let's say hello to Gary. How you doing, Gary?
How you doing there? And, there's basically, looks like there's some interesting things potentially on the horizon, at least, when it comes to ADB. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that we get a chance to pour over some of that right now instead, and to, keep the counterbalance in the INI for later.
Yes, I think that would be most excellent. And no, this is not Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, just to let people know that. Whoops. Don't mind me. I'm in the middle of trying to bring up things so I can actually keep an eye on the stream. But anywho, okay, let's do that. Good. So now I can focus on you. Now, so actually, why don't we start with that? Because I'm sure there's many things that we can go forward from that, which is someone started this thread called the next module, because obviously ADB has been kind of quiet as of late when it comes to SFB modules. Now, you know, they've done some last thing they've done module wise as an add on to a current product, I think, was the FNE is what it was. I know they've had some ship cards for Federation Commander, but they haven't done any new modules. I know that, you know, because it's been years since the Omega playtest came out, so I forget which FNE it was. So people are interested in SFB, because Lord knows I like SFB. I know, Gary, you like at least the Starfleet Universe, the background material. I'm not sure. I know you've never got really an opportunity to play itself. Correct?
Okay. So basically, usually when it comes to counter sheets, they have been, I guess, for the last few decades, I suppose, they've been the driving force in terms of new, either it's SFB or Federation Commander or whatever. But as you know, well, as some of you may or may not know listening, usually what happens is that Fed and Empire countersheets usually get done in a separate batch because they're double-sided. Right. So, for example, if you have like a counter for a Federation Heavy Cruiser, when it's normal, it's got like 8 points on one side, and then you flip it over to the crippled side, it's got 4, and so on and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. So usually what will happen is that by the time a certain FNE product runs out of stock, or then they can basically prepare, they would prepare a counter sheet, which would allow them to re-release a product, usually updated to the current 2010 edition of the rulebook. So, for example, Fighter Operations was updated in 2016, which included like a major revision to the Four Powers War scenario. Right. And that at the same time, they were able to basically use the same counter sheet to print the LDR, Vudar, and Saltorian counters for FNE Minor Empires. So that's kind of the thing where you basically, in times past at least, either a single-sided or a double-sided counter sheet would include something old or something new. Now, for single-sided counters, it's a little bit different. So I think the last batch included the Esterfi Battles counters for Module C6, the Bravians and the, well, guess who?
Yeah.
And then there's also, that would have included, I'm trying to remember what the last Fed Commander module, it might have been Reinforcements Attack, but it was one of those ones or something. And then maybe there was one of the Starfleet Marines modules, because I think their counters are single-sided. And there was like a fourth product. It might have been a reprint of an older, like an SFBC module or something, or whatever it was. But you get the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was them. But in the current age of COVID, it seems to be up in the air as to like who out there can either A, produce counters affordably and to the standard ADB expects, or B, can produce them in, like, whether or not they have like any kind of flexibility in terms of the numbers that they need. Because, like, for example, if there's a company that only deals in large orders, then it would be kind of like the full-on countersheet orders that have been done in the past.
Right.
But if there's a company that comes along and is able to offer like short runs, That might make things interesting as well. But
right. Especially if it's economical.
Basically,
because I know some of the reasons why you have to do larger print runs is just the cost per sheet gets pretty high for the smaller lots.
Yeah. Well, in the pre-era era anyway. Mm-hmm. So now what was basically discussed is this was actually a spin-off because there's a Starfleet Battles General discussion thread that is on the BBS right now. And a few days ago, someone was asking, what's the likelihood of a new SFB product?
Right.
And Steve Cole was saying that if they can find somebody to do the counter sheet, it's looking like 100%. And but then later on, I think he said that it'll probably be after Captain's Log 54 before any, you know, serious investigation is put in or whatever, which is fine. But of course, you know, but I guess the main what happened is that a bunch of people were posting their preferences for a new module. And sometimes, like in the past, when this kind of discussion happened, it kind of peters out. But this time, it was actually taken out of the SFB general discussion, and an entirely new thread was created.
Oh, okay.
By ABB. So this is basically a more for realsy discussion. What I would suggest is that for anyone out there who is listening, who's into Starfleet Battles, now, if you have a personal preference in terms of what the next module would be, what you'd be willing to pay for, now is the time to go onto the BBS and add your thoughts to the discussion. And I guess time will tell as to like where it all goes. But I suppose the main question would be whether or not, because the thing is that to give some context, should I continue or should
yes,
I,
yeah,
or
please.
Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, okay, I mean, at the moment, though, obviously, the one thing you pointed out earlier is the whole cost of counters and creating counters and creating and maybe figuring out new ideas on actually creating counters. Well, so I noticed there was some discussion in the threads here.
There is that. So I guess what I would say is to take a step back for a second and think about what an SFB product can be and what it should be, whatever. So we know that there's, I guess we could call them full modules or
right.
premium modules. They're the ones that like module C6.
Right, that introduce basically a new empire and have new rules with new weapons and systems and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the past, that's also included like things like module R12 or R11. Like, they've got the counter sheet, they've got the fancy cover, because I think the cover has to be paid for separately, because ABB are only able to print the black and white rule books and SSD books in house.
Color
covers have to be ordered separately as well.
Right.
So there's that. Then the second level, I guess, the level down. Is a product like module C3A, which has a fancy color cover, but has no counter sheets. So it's still, I guess you call it a deluxe model product, though it's not quite the premium level the way like C6 would be. But it's still a formal publication.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got, I guess, playtest products, which would be things like module E4 or E3, which don't have a color cover, and they're still technically playtests, so they're not formal publications, but they've got the full whack and of SSDs and so forth, whatever, to try to make, like, say, the Borak or Paladin campaign compatible.
Right.
And what I was actually thinking would be interesting is that, because over in Federation Commander, there's the concept of EPACs, where in between the print runs of full-scale FC products, you can get PDFs, or in some cases, they actually have print-on-demand versions that you can order off the ADB storefront. So if you would rather have a physical copy. And they would either include things like ship card packs. So for example, if you want to have a set of Andromedan ship cards, you can just get the pack for like $5 or $10 or whatever, $5 or $6, whatever it is. And alternatively, there's like, for example, the Lost Empires, the Paravians and Carnivons, there is a separate PDF pack that includes 3 Carnivon ships and 3 Paravian ships. And the rules needed to fly them in Federation Commander. But that's considered to be a preview pack because it's not quite... I mean, you can still use them, but it's just that it's not considered to be a full-scale product, but that's fine. I mean, it's And also you've got like playtest material and stuff. Yeah. So what I think, what would be personally, what I think is that while at the same time that the discussion is going on in terms of what the next full, like premium or deluxe, or whatever you want to call it, product would be, is I think SFB could maybe lean into the concept of e-packs to an extent. Like, for example, say if there's a new playtest empire and you could do, say, between 12 to 16 SSDs and the rules needed to try them out and worry about formal publication if they prove themselves. Or if you've got an empire that has a certain number of ships that haven't been done, like, say, formally published, I should say, but maybe there's not quite enough to fill a full-size module, but there's enough to, like, make things interesting. Then maybe, like, for example, I don't know if we've talked about it before, but the ISC, they really get serious about building things like war cruisers during the Andromeda invasion because they lose so many of their regular ships to the Andros that they need to turn to them to try to build up again. And also, if you look at the Lost Empire timelines in Module C6, in at least two of those timelines, the whole concept of War People's Peace gets thrown out the window by the Paravians. So the ISC actually become a traditional empire allied to the Gorans. So in those timelines, they would presumably start building things like war cruisers at the same time as other Alpha Octant empires. So if you, for example, needed a product that had like war cruiser scouts and commando ships and so forth, I mean, yes, you could try to put that into like a Module R13, but if there aren't enough historical ships to fill out an R13, I'm saying that there aren't, but for argument's sake, you could maybe do a mini, like an e-pack, whatever, and say, okay, here's a single empire's worth of a handful of ships that are real and go have fun. It's like, you know, less of a time sink. It doesn't need a fancy cover. It doesn't need counters. You know, go out there and have fun. And basically the same kind of thing that you would do with FC. I think that personally, I think that that would be a pretty interesting option. But I just want to get your thoughts on that, actually.
Okay. When it comes to e-packs, well,
yeah.
I would say the big issue with e-packs, as Steve Call pointed out, is that it still costs them the same amount of work, same amount of time, same amount of effort to create an e-pack than to create a printed product. The only thing that you save on is, of course, is the printing material, which is minuscule compared to the price of the product. The big question in when it comes to e-packs is how much money are people willing to pay? Are they willing to pay at least close to what is considered full price for, and this is a full, I'm talking about a full module, not a like a playtest pack, whereas, you know, it's very small. So obviously it's not going to be nearly as much work to create. There's still, you know, obviously when it comes to the design effort, when it comes to the rules and so forth, but when it comes to the number of ships, it's going to be a lot less. So therefore a lot less work to actually provide. And I agree in that case, those would be, I think the whole idea of having an e-pack as a way of testing the waters when it comes to what kind of product people will buy, I think it's a valid reason to create an e-pack. Obviously, but the thing is, you know, you could use it as a feeler for finding out, okay, what exactly sells. Now, the tough part about that is that, unlike creating new games, where you look for a certain number of pre-orders and then you'll actually build the game, and they're considered separate games, not part of an integrated product. When it comes to whole concept of these kind of playtest materials to fill out, those still have to have some kind of integration into the Starfleet Battles product and possibly with the other playtest products themselves. So that's going to be a lot more work when it comes to the whole idea of balancing and integrating the rules between the different products. You know, so that makes it a little more difficult to swallow overall. And obviously then we have to worry about the whole problem with piracy, where you have a certain number of people that actually download and buy the product from, let's say, Warhouse 23. And then there are all these other copies that show up on the internet because people don't, oh, I bought it and I'm free to give it to whoever I want. Well, that is not the case. And, you know, they won't be able to sell as many copies versus a hard copy, you know, which, you know, a physical copy, which is, you know, harder to basically steal. So,
For comparison's sake, if you look at Federation Commander, now it has the same delay between full modules in terms of the print runs, but it's actually been quite a while since there was the last. But there's been, of course, there's topics, you know, on the burn, a slow burn in terms of, you know, will X ships be next, or will fighters or PFs or whatever. But the, generally speaking,
death to all fighters.
Unless you're Hydran or Hyper, maybe.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so what I will say is, not counting any current COVID shenanigans, up until now, usually a full Federation Commander product with laminated ship cards has had about 16 cards in the prime product. And also, there's been a number of cards that go into three booster packs. Like, in other words, for example, when War and Peace was released in 2010, and it included the Andromedans, the ISC, and the Vudar, it included three booster packs, 28, 29, and 30, each of them giving you some of the ships are the same, similar or the same as the ones that are in the prime product, but others are new. So I think it's something like around 24 distinct cards. The number escapes me off the top of my head, but you get the idea. Usually, if you look at an e-pack for Federation Commander, the standard ones are usually about $5, and they come with about six ships. There's been talk about a new pack with eight or something like that, but I'll have to wait and see if that happens. Mm-hmm. But usually in those ships, the e-packs, they're either the same standard ships that you get in laminated print or whatever, or maybe they'll throw in a bonus extra card that doesn't exist in print, or at least not right now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like, for example, like the Feds have about three or four e-packs, and there's ships like the Galactic Survey Cruiser or the Old Heavy Cruiser that you can get in those packs. Basically, I guess you could say that the price points are different, and also the number of ship cards are different. But it's okay. I mean, like, it seems to be working so far. There's been quite a number of e-packs out there, and I'd like to think that there's enough honest people purchasing them to make it worthwhile.
Right.
That's kind of like the headspace I was in when it comes to SFB. Like, I wouldn't necessarily want a side e-pack to have 64 or 80 SSDs, but maybe, as I say, 12 or 16, and just enough to either expand upon a pre-existing empire like the ISC or Andromedans or whoever. In the Federation, sure, because like there's like things like the Fraley cruiser Powerista. you could put that into a pack. The Nightmare on Elm Street pack. Or as I say, introduce a brand new, like a new playtest empire, like one of Omega's Lost Futures, or like one of the Triangulum Empires, or something like that. Yeah, or even like, for example, if you look at Module C6, there are no X-ships in it. But it would be difficult to, like, even if there's a new X-ship module, like a Module X1B or whatever you call it, for first-generation X-ships, I should say, it's a question as to, do they actually fit in there because they're Alpha Octans, or do they not fit in there because they're conjectural? So maybe what you could do is do, like, a mini-pack where you pay a smaller amount and you get a smaller number of X-ship SSDs, but enough to make them competitive with Gorn and ISC X-ships or Andromeda ships or whatever. And then it basically, you know, I mean, there still be a degree of workload involved in terms of creating the SSDs, but not nearly as much as there is
Terms
of like creating a full-fledged module.
Agreed, but you know, which means what you're talking about. Well, it depends upon what would be in X1B, because if it's X1B, it would have to include X ship rules for like the Omega Empires. Which actually, the question: did the Omega Empires actually ever get the X kind of X ship kind of technologies kind of thing ever get to that?
Well, they do, but they would be like a dedicated Omega X module, which would be a separate category of product from an Alpha Octant X ship module.
Right. So you're imagining you're imagining the X1B module to be more ships, but in the Alpha Octant.
Well, there is a discussion thread for X1B on the BBS right now, and people like can post ships because there have been a number of. X ships, like for example, X frigates that were, I think they were in Captain's Log 51, 52 or something. Because I remember that I think the Klingon E4X is a little bit cheap for how powerful it is. I mean, like the good comparison would be because in X1R, there's a Win Barracuda X, which is about 120 points. But anyway, but the E4X is much cheaper than that. But that's a discussion for another time. But yeah, basically. So I suppose at this point we should probably double back to the main point I was trying to get to, is to what should be in the next module.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, okay. Yeah, there are many different modules. As I pointed out before we started the show, that one of the things I would really like to see is the Tholian, module, for M81. Especially talking about the empires that were either severely curtailed or completely, eliminated because of the Tholian will. I'm not sure that'd be interesting to see what that would be made up of, to be as it stands, because of what timeline would you then deal with? Would you deal with basically the whole campaign of the Tholian will to eliminate these kind of strongholds, or do you want to wait after the Tholian will is basically broken and they go yik and leave the galaxy because of the Seltorians and the whole uprising and them coming back, some of the I'm not sure how many were actually wiped out versus like defanged. Because most of the time it's kind of the whole idea of wiping out a civilization is kind of pointless. It's waste of people, waste of manpower and that kind of thing. So that's one of the things I would like to see. But I think the major holdup with that is basically they want to get out GURPS Tholian first. Which I'm not sure if they ever will get to round to finishing that, because I know it's been a slow burn for a long, long, long time.
Well, if it helps... back the last time when Module C6 itself was being selected, this was back, I guess, late 2012, early 2013, there was a memo that was posted as an adjunct to that discussion thread, which was, I guess that discussion has long gone now. But the point of the thread was to basically look at the various options and try to list them in order of probability in terms of, how viable they were at this stage of the game. And I think that some of the things haven't changed all that much in the years since, even with all the new captain's logs that have been published. So I guess I put it like this. First, probably the most heavily sought after product at this point for Starfleet Battles, in terms of a premium product with countermeasures, right, I should say, would be Module X2, second generation X ships. And of course, that would involve a lot of new rules and SSDs and so forth, and a lot of playtesting to figure out how well they work. But it would introduce a brand new era, and it would open up the Alpha Octant in whole new ways. So there is that. And personally, I wouldn't necessarily want to see X2 done without counters. So I'd be very surprised, because it would be like the premium of premium products. So I'd be very surprised if it showed up without counters, unless it was entirely impossible to do counters anymore.
Understood.
I suppose there's always shapeways.
Right. Understood. And we'll talk about counters in just a moment, because I actually would like to have a discussion about the how to create counters and maybe some other ideas on that. Because I know there were some discussions in the topic about that. Well, I actually do want to discuss that. But the one thing I wanted to point out was that, if I recall correctly, when it comes to X2, part of X2 wasn't just the Alpha Octant and its X2 technology, but also the introduction of Zircalians. Or am I wrong?
Well, it's...
Uh-oh. I think I might just lost Gary. I don't know. Was that me? No, that's not me. Okay. Dave, can you still hear me? Gary, I can't hear you. I'll hear the beep beep. I'm not sure if it's me or you or what. Okay, that looks fine. Yeah, okay. Which means I can't hear Gary. Gary, you're gonna have to... Okay, I think that's a problem with Gary. Okay, Gary. Okay, I'm not sure if he's actually in the room too. Okay, you hear the beep too. Okay. So, I'm not sure if Gary's in the chat. Okay, let's look. Okay, I was wondering if I could tell. I can tell, and he's not in the chat. Crap. Okay, I don't want to block him. Let's mute and see if that does anything. 5. Okay. I think definitely it's Gary's phone. I'm not sure what happened with Gary. Okay. I'm going to mute him. Gary, if you can hear me, please call back. You hang up and come back. Okay, if you can hear me. I'm going to mute Gary. I'm not sure what happened, Gary. I do not know. But, okay. I'm going to continue on that line of thought at the moment. And hopefully Gary can hear my voice and can call back. And please, Kitty. Sorry. One of my cats is in here, and it's the new kitten. So, anyhow. Gary, please call back. But when it comes to the X2 and the Zircalians, even if they're intrinsically tied, at least most of the time I've heard a discussion about both of them. And so that's, to me, that means they're part of the same material. Or same product. Now, it is possible to split it off. So you have X2 ships and you have the Zircalians. Now, the question, of course, in that case, would be which one would sell more, which is the X2 ships or the Zircalians. I'm not sure which. Excuse me. See, this is the little numb nut that's being a pain in the butt. Okay, but yes, so I think I still don't hear anything from Gary except for some beep beeps. Okay, crap. I'm not sure what maybe a glitch in the system. But anyway, I want to bet, you know, most people don't want the X2 because the way I feel like when it comes to the Zorkalians is that the question is, where are they going to fit in? Where they're going to have the Zorkalians and then have some minor empires, which they continue to battle out. But from my understanding, the xenophobic nature of the Zorkalians are such that, they just, any resistance they find, they just completely just wipe them out. You know, which, them being such xenophobic. Okay, cool. Hopefully Gary will call me back. Xenophobic people, I can see them doing that. But the big question on that really is, at that point, is, okay, do they have minor races, or is our introduction to the Zorkalians with the first interactions with the Alpha Octant and possibly the Omega? You know, because if I recall the timeline, with X2, basically we're starting to get into the commerce and ships and interactions between the Alpha Octant and the Omega Octant. And the Zorkalians and the Sargasso are the next octant over from the Omega octant. Gary, you there?
Yeah, the line kind of cut out. What was the last thing you heard me say?
I don't remember at this point. I was sending it back to you after I talked about X2 and Zorkalians and how I thought they might be intrinsically tied.
Yeah, well, okay. So, but I was just very quickly, I was just saying that I think it's most likely the Zorkalians will be in their own separate product after X2 itself is done. But I was also saying that it'd be great if the opportunity was taken to plan ahead in terms of both thinking about what X2 would be in shape-waste terms and also how to make it easy to convert into things like Federation Commander and Occult Arm Starfleet.
Oh, understood. But I think, well, definitely, Star Arms, that one, that one and the Starmada, those are different systems versus Federation Commander. Because Federation Commander, in my mind, would be a pretty easy overall compared to the other two conversion from SFB roles to Federation Commander roles, because for the most part, they're a straight conversion with some simplifications built in. Period. I was about to say if possible, but it's like, no, that would be done. So that would be the simple one to do. I'm willing to bet, you know, ADB is going to, if it's going to be a new SFB, it's going to have a new SFB product with new empires and new rules, new systems and all that, new weapons and all that kind of thing. It's going to be, it has to be first, and then, okay, how can we then convert it to these different systems? Because Lord knows that some of these systems don't quite have a one-to-one conversion. It's not an easy conversion. Lord knows the first Armada one was a pretty bad one, though. The first conversion, the one thing I definitely liked was the movement system. I still liked it. But things like having actually shields, the high concept of shields in Star Armada does not work. But I don't think they, I really don't think it'd be a good idea to focus on that, on focusing on trying to create basically rules for all four systems at the same time. I think it's a waste of effort. Because first they have...
Well, I think more in terms of...
No.
I mean, at the very least, I think that, like, for example, if there's new weapon or new functions for weapons or new systems or whatever, if they're in multiples of four rather than three, or if they're basically just something that makes it easier to map it into Fed Commander. I mean, it's not like a deal breaker. I'm sure FC will figure its own solution out, but at the very least, I think FC, because it's more of an internal system, it might be nice. Actually, I wouldn't mind if some of the ideas from FC, like, it'd be interesting. Like, imagine if the X2 version of the ESG had the burst mode based on how the ESG works in FedCom.
Agreed. That'd be definitely nice to... Yeah, that's... Agreed. That is something that could happen, which is bringing some of the weapons interactions and how the rules work in FedCom, bringing them into Starfleet Battles, you know, when it comes to the way the weapon systems work. I can definitely see that as kind of inspiration into an X2, you know, second generation X ship version of the weapon. You know, some additional capabilities like the ESG, as you pointed out. I can easily see that being a good way of starting out. And this has been discussed multiple times. Even had a whole big thread many years ago at this point. About the second generation X-ships, and that is, what is the next way of building ships? You know, that's still consistent to the way Starfleet Battles works, but it is, makes it a more powerful ship without just doubling up everything. You know?
Well, there is a new X2 discussion thread that's over in the proposals board, and there are a few concepts that have been posted in there. But not to go in too deeply, because I guess we want to talk about the other potential modules too. But the main talking points would be that X2 ships cannot be converted from pre-X2 ships. That basically the new technology has to be kind of woven in as it's constructed. So you can't basically get a King Eagle X2 or an upgrade to the Fed. You know, basically, it's like you start over from scratch technology-wise.
Right. But at the same time, there's one thing you got.
They were talking about how...
Well, Gary, one thing that must be pointed out, I feel, that is you have to be very, very careful. And that is... Maybe not as long lines when it comes to the rules and the aspects of how the weapons work. I don't think that's a big deal. But the way the shapeways miniatures are going to look, that you need to be very, 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 very careful so that those ships don't look like the current Star Trek, like next generation ships at all. Because then they'd be able to get into a big, big problem with Paramount.
Well, of course, as a counterpoint to that, I would point to the shapeways miniature for the CX or the DX, for that matter, that are already up there. I'd argue that both of those do the job well in terms of showing refits to their respective classes that introduce to X technology, but that do it in a totally different way than what you see with the motion picture.
Oh,
understood. I wouldn't expect to see any franchise influence. I'd rather it didn't, because I don't want ADB to go the wrong way. But I think that there's definitely avenues that can be explored that are true to the SFU, but that still look cool. So
Understood. But I just want to make sure that's one thing that people have to think about and remember, is that ADB does not have a license for using Star Trek, Next Generation, that IP at all. Obviously, some of the weapon systems, like the whole idea of, I'm not sure if you watched any of the Star Trek Next Generation episodes. But, you know, one of the things that is totally different when it comes to the next generation is that basically instead of having individual phasers, what you have is a kind of a phaser strip on the saucer. And so it actually fires from that strip. So you can easily see that kind of idea being brought forward into the second generation X ships, where, you know, you no longer have, you know, individual phaser implants, you know, that this has this phaser fires along this arc, this phaser fires along this arc. Possibly you have a phaser array that it has, you know, which covers basically an arc itself, and it's possible part of that arc can be knocked out. You know, that kind of idea. Or even just have it so that the amount of phasers that can be fired in that arc are limited, you know, and as you do damage to the ship, you knock out, you know, the number of phaser blasts that can occur from that kind of ring or that, you know, that arc there is limited. You know, that kind of idea.
I don't know. That I'd be worried that might twitch things for Paramount too much. So,
Gary, I think I really don't feel like Paramount is looking at the rules. I think they're more worried about IP itself, meaning things like, oh, the ship looks like a Star Trek Next Generation ship, or that picture of a ship looks like a Star Trek Next Generation ship, and then you've crossed the line. I think that's more of what they're worried about, and less worried about rules that the weapons are similar to the way things are in Star Trek. Now, obviously, we don't know how that weapon system works at all. There's no explanation, you know. So
now the other point, just quickly as we can, I suppose, the idea was being floated that because if they tried to basically do what they did with X1 and just, you know, add more shield boxes or whatever, things would get pretty crazy in terms of, like, you know, you'd have basically battleships flying each other against each other all the time.
So right.
Instead, what they were basically saying was to introduce a new system where if an X2 ship fights another X2 ship, the damage is normal. But if they fight a pre-X2 ship, then they'd have 100% additional damage against that ship. And they'd only take 50% damage from the pre-X2 ship. So in theory, imagine, like, if you had an X2 SSD and the ship only had, say, 22 shields on either side. Like, now that just, you know, spitballing here. Mm-hmm. And you were going up against an X1 ship, which has, say, 32 shields on either side. So on the X2 ship, those 22 shields would become the equivalent of 44 shields. But when you have X2 versus X2, they still only count as 22 shields. So the speed of the game is faster when X2 is fighting each other, but it still would scale with older technology ships in that sense.
Right. Which is ADB's real biggest concern, because that's one thing they have made it really clear when it comes to X2, which is it must be compatible with and work with the older generation ships. Yes, they can be more powerful versus those ships, but they cannot be be like flies to the second generation X ships. And obviously, as pointed out both by you and by me, is that just take all the weapons, just doubling them up, you know, double the number of boxes, double the amount of damage is kind of, you know, no. Now, the one thing actually I was thinking about on that was that I can see the whole concept when it comes to the weapons being second generation weapons, and the idea as sound as strange as it might sound, which is changing the way things are repaired. The repair cost gets more expensive for the second generation weapons, but you could actually repair them as like first generation weapons for a cheaper cost. Just like you can, you know, have like a Phaser 1, but you can repair it as like a Phaser 3 or a Phaser 2 for a cheaper cost. You know, that's one of those things that just came to my mind about that. But yeah, as you said, we want to point out some of the other possibilities for modules that were pointed out on the discussion thread.
Now, generally speaking, up until this point, the most popular modules have been ones set in the Alpha Octant during the main era, so Middle Years General War sort of thing.
That is true.
The problem with that is that there aren't a lot of ships that, I mean, the barrels are pretty scraped pretty clean at this point. I mean, we're down to the Fraile Paravista, and I mean, the Federation OSR. Now, I wouldn't say no to old series Federation ships, but I prefer new Terran design ships to be in the Aurorans rather than with Starfleet. But so, I mean, there's basically, you know, there are certain like classes that have been previewed in Captain's Log, like light battleships and so forth. And but there's been an overall question as to whether there are enough real ships as opposed to conjectural ships that could go into like an R-13 or a J-3 or a K-2 and so forth. Are there enough gunboats to, like, for example, are there enough fighters? Are there enough, you know, XYZ, whatever? Even when it comes to like early years or now, I would probably argue that you could probably do a few more Federation, like National Guard fleets, like you could do the Martians or Tellarites and so forth.
Right.
And you could do the early Budar and so forth. Or, I mean, for X, I mean, X1R is pretty good, but I mean, it's still the same question to a certain extent where, short of jumping all the way to X2, how tapped out is the rest of the Alpha Octant in terms of tactical warp the charged starships?
Oh, agreed. I think you're scraping the bottom of the barrel is when it comes to, it's like, how many more ships can there possibly have been? And when it comes to the Alpha Octant, yeah, I know people like to play in that octant and that timeline, but really? You know, there's only so many ships that ever existed. And as you point out, I don't think conjectural ships really will sell product. You know? And alternate timelines, I don't think people are really interested in alternate timelines. I really don't.
In all fairness, I mean, Module C6 did a good job of introducing ships because they made a point of saying, even if these Paravian and Carnivon ships don't exist in the standard timeline, there are other timelines where they are. So someone can buy C6 and consider them to be a quote-unquote real. They'd expect them to work. Now, I don't know how popular C6 is, but, I mean, it's still a fairly chunky product. But, I mean, they had to go to an alternate timeline to make them. I mean, yes, there is the potential for Carnivons to exist in Sargasso, or of course we know Paravians exist in Omega, but they're different products. They're not necessarily this product. So, which brings me to another topic, Omega, because basically there's tons of historical ships that are still
left undone. Like, yes, understood.
Yeah. So, like, there's star bases, there's togs and transports, there's battleships. Well, we don't know how many of them would be conjectural or not, but battleships would be cool. There's war cruisers, there's X-ships, there's even earlier potential, because you could look at, like, for example, the Mistrons. Like, you could look at the ships that the three founding species had, same way with the ISC and the Federation in the Y modules for the Alpha Octant. You could do separate Vulpa, Tazal, and Malimi ships and have them build up towards the Mistron Alliance. But then in the modern era, you could go in reverse, because when the Vulpa split off to become their own rival faction, we already have a sample Vulpa ship in Module Omega 2 and on Shapeways. I should point out, there is a miniature for the Vulpa Blockade Runner, and it's really cool looking. Because you can actually see, for example, they've taken, like, the influence is from the Mistron Destroyer, but it's much sleeker and meaner looking, and it doesn't have the floating platform that the Destroyer has. So and of course there's additional empires, like there's the Zosman Marauders that have been previewed in Captains of 50 and 52, and there's those Peravians, and there's empires that happened. They've only been listed by names, such as the Echari dynasty or the Scon. And so there's tons of stuff, whatever, that can be done. It's just a question as to what would be the best format. So one option could be to do maybe like either do what's been done already, where you pick a type of ship and do everyone's version of that. Or what I think might be a little better is to focus on only a handful of empires and really work towards getting them campaign compatible. Like I'd pick, say, Mysra and FRA and one other empire, or even just Mysra and FRA, and do all the ships they need to function as viable empires the same way that the Magellanic Cloud Empires work, or the way that the empires in Module C6 work. Mm-hmm. And then move on to another batch. So, for example, you could do rival empires like Prober and Trobrin, or you could do Iridani and Chlorophon, or you could do Blasco and Zosman. You see what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, because they're never going to fit everything in one module anyway, and I wouldn't expect them to. But it's been 20 years since Omega first came out, and still none of the empires are campaign compatible. So I think it's better to focus on a handful of empires and get them functioning, and then work that way rather than once again diluting each batch the same way. That, for example, like with Module Omega 5, it's got gunboats for a bunch of different empires, and right. It has early fast patrol ship tenders and so forth. But they're still like that's still not enough to make any of those individual empires work fully. Like it doesn't even necessarily represent all of the PF tenders that those empires have. I mean, that sort of thing works in the Alpha Octant, like when Module K came out, and it did the same thing where it introduced, here's the Federation Thunderbolt, it's conceptual, right. By the way, unless you're in the Andromeda Dark timeline. And here's the Klingon G1, and here's the Starhawk, and so forth. But the core empires that those ships were for were already at the point where they worked properly. Like, you had things like Module R2, and you had, you know, I mean, they all use the same SSDs for their star bases and battle stations, so you didn't need to worry too much about, like, oh, I don't have a separate Klingon starbase SSD. Woe is me. You can use the generic one. Of course, Omega, you can't do that. I mean, a Mysron starbase doesn't look anything like a Drek starbase or a Soldra, if a Soldra even have a starbase. So I think that... But at the same time, I mean, Omega is its own thing. Like, you don't need to worry. Like, for example, if you look at Module C6, it's got variants for everything, basically. Like, there's war cruiser minesweepers, there's war destroyer minesweepers, there's frigate minesweepers, and so forth. You don't need that in Omega. You could basically just say, okay, well, maybe this empire just did one type of minesweeper, and then another one when they develop warships, war cruisers and stuff, and that's it. So you could probably do half or as many mission variants that you need in the Alpha Octant, and they would still work perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that would basically help cut down on the number of SSDs that need to go into a certain product.
Right.
And if you're focusing mainly on the current empires, you don't need any new rules because all the rules exist.
Agreed. Actually, just a note for those who are not actually watching and only listening. Dave says that he likes actually alternate timelines, even though I don't feel like that would be a big seller. Obviously, the big question, which is always ADB's focus when it comes to new products, is what will sell? And to be honest, I'm not sure that Omega sells. You know, I personally would like to see those empires filled out, you know, when it comes to the what ships would make up a complete fleet when it comes to those empires, because you know some of those ships existed, they had to exist, and of course the bases had to exist, but we have no SSDs, no idea of what they actually look like, you know.
We don't even have most of the Phaser 4 rules.
Right. Because, you know, they don't have a phaser fours, you know, currently in Omega, and there would need to be some kind of weapon like that. Let's say that they didn't have phaser fours. Let's say that they use more heavy weapons. Maybe that's a quirk of how Omega solved the issue. That, you know, so they have these more powerful.
Well, I should note that the Federal Republic, they retain Alpha Octant phaser force. So, and also, I think the Kixxer, they have a Mega Gauss cannon. So, I should say that most Omega empires don't have their phaser force. But I think that that's the reason why I would focus on Mies Run and FRA. The FRA, I guess they could have more of an in for players because they use Terran ships for the most part. I mean, they've got a couple of bonus ships, like there's a few Klingon hulls that we talked about before, and there's the Orion Raider Cruiser and so forth, and there's a Lyran ship. But for the most part, they use ships that are derived from, like, the Terran Light Cruiser and the Terran Police Cutter.
Right.
So they're a bit more close to home, for lack of a better word. For someone who's basically looking at Omega for the first time, then it's something that's like, you know, it's home from home, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Mies Runs, because they're so central to the history of the Omega Octant, like they were, and they worked together with the FRA and against them in terms of the Civil War. So those two empires, if you basically work them out and highlight the fact that you can get a bunch of Mies Run ships on straightways, then that basically might be a good first step in terms of trying to basically highlight, you know, what makes Omega, how Omega works, and hopefully make it more interesting as a setting. And then, of course, it would make life easier in terms of trying to convert them to other game systems, because the FC Omega project would definitely benefit from more Mies Run or FRA ships. Mm-hmm. And in the future, now, I can't speak for, you know, how long this would be, but I think it would be really cool if either Starmada or Call to Arms made use of the fact that there's so many Omega Shapeways miniatures now to actually do, you know, look at, you know, give people more ways to use those miniatures. So,
right.
And also, because, I mean, if people are wary about some of the weird empires and stuff, like the Soldier or Branthodons and so forth, I mean, yes, they exist, but you wouldn't necessarily have to pick them to be the first empire that you bring up to campaign compatibility.
Right, well,
you can ease in with the more normal empires and then get to the quirky stuff later, if the demand is out there for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that actually brings up an excellent question, though. Does the next product need to be an SCB module? Obviously, that's what the discussion here is about, and what's on the discussion board. But there's still certain things that are not available in Starmada. There's certain things that are still not available in Call to Arms, which is, like just the Omegas, which are, the Omegas, the LMCs. I'm not worried about the Triangulum, but and the question, obviously the problem with that is that I'm pretty sure that Starmada, the reason why it sells at all is because of it's another way of playing Star Trek. In that, with that rule set, for those avid players who like the Star Model rule set, but also like Star Trek, and that's a way in for that, versus, you know, if they ported like the Omega weapons and ships, would that people actually buy that, because they look and go, what, this is not Star Trek, you know? But.
Well, yeah. The thing is that doubles back to the point we were saying earlier, is that when it comes to the Alpha Octant, with the exception of X2, which has loads of new opportunities, a lot of the well has run dry. So at least Omega offers a venue where you can actually have real ships to sink your teeth into, even if, I mean, I readily admit that it wouldn't be as popular as an Alpha Octant empire,
mm-hmm.
Or empires.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so it's, I mean, like, the thing is, I mean, this might be, you know, moot, but the thing is, this is actually one reason why I tried to mention the EPAC idea, because, you know, if there were more bite-sized products that helped chip away at some of these other settings, then, you know, that would be, you know, it wouldn't necessarily, you know, trying to think of a way to put this. It would basically be a way to kind of keep those settings on the boil until the time comes where they could be reconsidered for something else.
Right.
Or even if they never get considered for something else, then it doesn't mean that nothing ever happens for them. Because, mm-hmm. like, I'll give you an example. Battletech, you know, the guys Catalyst Game Labs, they are currently working on a new source book called Ill Clan, which will basically basically bring the end to the Dark Age that was introduced with the Clicky game a few decades ago.
Right.
And prepare the setting for an entirely new era. Spoiler alert, there's an Ill Clan, which basically, I don't know if you're familiar with Battletech or not. But yeah, so now they haven't said what the Ill Clan will be because that's the big surprise. But at the same time, all this really cool stuff, like the highlight stuff is happening. Like there was a Kickstarter for a new batch of Clan Invasion battle mechs in terms of like product packs rather. And there's a bunch of new things. There's also, they themselves are actually doing a bunch of print on demand or PDF files. Like for example, are you familiar with Battletech yourself?
Yes. I'm not up to date when it comes to the rules and the systems and so forth. It's been years since I've actually played or read about Battletech, but I know the history, the generic history.
Okay. Well, to compare it to the Starfleet universe, the Inner Sphere empires, they're basically the most popular. The same with the Alpha Octant, it would be the core of the SFQ.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that other settings don't exist. You've got the clans, you've got the periphery nations, either the near periphery nations or deep periphery.
Right.
There's actually a really great source book that actually looks at the far reaches of Unknown's Place, shows all these really cool, you know, out of the way groups and so forth that you wouldn't necessarily see on the tabletop, but from an RPG perspective, they're pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
About a couple of weeks ago, Catalyst Game Labs posted a state of the game, which basically gives you a look at a whole slew of products that they're going to be releasing over the next couple of decades. I posted a link to it on the ADB BBS under other games for players who like them. And of course, Ill Clan is talked about as being in the, you know, the mid to distant future because it still needs more work. But there's a whole bunch of like fiction novels and sheets with new battle mechs and so forth that are going to be kind of like Ill Clan adjacent. And there's still stuff for older time periods. So for example, there's going to be some of the wars of the Inner Sphere that took place in earlier time periods, they're going to be covered too. So it won't just be the future. It's kind of like the way, you know, if you go to Starfleet Battles, you can buy Module Y1 or you can buy Module X1, but there's support for both of them. So, but what's also interesting is that as a side product, they're taking the time to do a new product, which is going to look at at two deep periphery nations. One of them is called the Hanseatic League, which has never really been properly covered in the source book.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's meant to be the biggest faction in the deep periphery, they're like 27 star systems or 29 or whatever. And they're going to basically be attacked by, there's another little pocket realm called Nueva Castile that was taken over by a clan, the Goliath Scorpions, who are kicked out of the clan homeworlds. And in 3140, they're going to launch an attack on the Hansa. And that has nothing to do with what's happening in the Inner Sphere. And if people who play Inner Sphere, like if they like the Federated Sons or the Draconis Combine, they don't have to buy that product, although it'd be nice if they did. But there's basically going to be a venue for people who are interested in the deep periphery to get these products and so forth.
Right.
So, I mean, they won't be the same as a shiny new source book like Ill Clan. They don't have to be. So maybe something similar could be a way to approach things for SFB, where, you know, there'll be the marquee products like X2, but their existence doesn't mean that there won't be any work at all on like an EPAC for a new playtest Omega faction or some sort of, you know, pack for, you know, additional ships from older Alpha Octant eras. Because as we were saying earlier, like imagine if you can't do enough real ships to do an 80-page SSD book, then do them in smaller bites and leave them for people to buy the same way that they would for FD or whatever.
Right, and they could be lower cost because the number of ships would be lesser,
I guess you could call it like a broad spectrum of options. Mm-hmm. So, so I guess, I feel like we've gone in a bunch of different directions in this talk, more than I planned, I suppose. But I suppose I just reiterate that as the headline topic in terms of what the new product should be, X2 or something else, by all means, go on to the BBS and, you know, tell what you think. Mm-hmm. And whether or not you'd be willing to get it with or without counters, that might be another interesting question.
Yeah, well,
but
that brings up a good...
If you think that it would be like an e-packet...
Hmm? Well, that brings up a really good question, which is, as you pointed out, the whole idea of counters versus no counters. And when it comes to the way of producing counters, are multifaceted in the way you can do that. From the traditional counters where you actually have a factory punch them out on the card stock, you know, the heavy, thick stuff which produces the counters. That's one way of doing it. You know, whether it's a large batch or small batch, we're not going to argue batches. We're just going to talk about, you know, what kind of counters, because obviously for SMB, it's single-sided counters, so that makes things a lot cheaper because Lord knows the biggest issue that F&E has with double-sided counters is that those counters both sides have to line up. That is not a simple task to do. But in addition to that, you have that as a possibility. Then you have what I think is another alternative, which is another physical printing, which I'm sure, Gary, you've seen them, which is sometimes in like the captain's log, there's an additional kind of hard, you know, not quite hard stock. It's more kind of, I'm debating on how stiff it is. Because I think it's just a little bit stiffer than the actual cover sheet, the cover for the captain's log. Or it might be around the same. Yeah, it's around the...
You're thinking of how in Captain's Log 50, they had... The stock was almost the same. Like, you know, like when you buy a regular SFB module, each rule book or SSD book, it's got that like slightly thicker paper that's right on the front and back cover.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like that same material.
Right.
In CL50, they used that to do a bunch of Romulan Civil War counters for F&E,
right,
which would be good enough for playtest. So if people don't want to wait until a new Civil War module is printed, they can buy CL50 and cut out the pick counters they want, and away they go.
I'll approach that one in just a moment. But okay, then of course, then from there is the next level, which I feel like in theory you could do paper. You just print them. Have, you know, when you sell the paper product, you can actually have this regular printout, but that's not going to be cheap because they need to be color. So I'm not sure that any savings can be done when it comes to that. And I don't think that'd be really acceptable for most people. Obviously, most people, I think, who actually want physical counters, they're going to want the card stock, the heavy card stock. I'm here to bring up the possibilities of alternate things. And that is, of course, then you have electronic counters. The whole idea of, okay, we've got the counters in like a PDF form, and then possibly A to B coming up, getting deals with some, you know, or find online facilities that will actually either create counters for the players, so they can be, it's more on demand, or possibly even, as was pointed out in the next module topic, which is the possibility of having so people can print out their own, you know, print it out on a printer on sticky paper, and then have it take that, cut it up yourself, and then apply it to cardstock, and obviously cut out the cardstock yourself. That's another approach.
That's actually already done for the Fed Commander EPACs. Like, for example, if you look at the preview pack for the Paravians and Carnivons, if you scroll to like the last page,
mm-hmm,
there's like three different scales. I think there's like 1/2 inch, 1 inch, and then I don't know if they're 2 or 4 inch. They're pretty big, actually. counters for each of the ships that are in that product. So, and something similar happens, like, for example, if you buy, say, like a Federation e-pack with a bunch of six or whatever ships, then they have different scale counters that you can print like PDF on in the PDF.
Mm-hmm.
That, if you wish, you can create yourself. So, yeah, I mean, like, I definitely think that's that would be an interesting thing to add to, like, an e-pack or whatever like that, where you basically say, okay, well, look, you know, here's something, and if you maybe if you order it from the what do you call it? The because like for example, like the current version of the Omega and LMC playtest packs for FC,
mm-hmm.
you can actually go to the ADB storefront and order a paper copy, and they, you know, so I mean, maybe they could do something similar with these e-packs. You could basically stick them on as side things, because I mean, if it's print on demand anyway, then and if there's nothing in them that can't print, then why not have them on there too? And then you could just say, well, how about an extra dollar? And you get cardstock with the same way with the Romulan Civil War counters I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that would be, I mean, it's, of course, I mean, in the ideal world, you would want to have the real deal. But, you know, if the real deal is, you know, either impossible to get now, which I'm hoping it is possible, or if it's already pre-assigned for X2 or for whatever, then,
right.
you know, it doesn't mean that product, you know, because I think there was actually somebody was asking about whether there'll be a PDF cover sheet for module C3A. And it doesn't seem like that's an impossible option either. So, you know, I mean, it's you're right. You're absolutely, I agree in terms of figuring out new ways to allow people to have something.
Right,
But, you know, I mean, there's, and that's the other great thing about Shapeways as well, because, I mean, think about back to 2013 when module C6 was being printed. If you had told anyone by then you can get 1,200 or more miniatures on Shapeway, on a single platform, and they'd all look great. Well, most of them anyway. They'd laugh at you. They think you're crazy. I mean, like, we had just gotten the Mongoose deal back then, and we thought that that was great. I mean, like, because you were getting, like, a couple dozen new ships and new designs for, like, Sparrowhawk and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, the sheer difference in terms of what was available then and what's now. I mean, like, there's some crazy, I mean, you can get the Powerista on Shapeways. Although, I guess, you know, you could kitbash one yourself if you wanted to. But, I mean, there's so many really cool things that Shapeways has allowed.
Oh, agreed. But
I'd like to think that that would basically help encourage more players, especially now with the 7000 series. I mean, just recently they released things like 4 or 5 different sets of Hydran sprues and Orion sprues for, like, all sorts of different combinations of, do you want your Hellbores, do you want your Fusions, do you want command, like, enforcer ships for the Orions or so forth. And, you know, for years people were saying, I want to have elite scale miniatures, and now there's tons of them. So, I mean, maybe now is the time to try to re-up people's interest in playing Starfleet Battles with miniatures in whatever scale they feel comfortable.
Oh, understood. But here's the issue with miniatures, and that is cost. It's prohibitively expensive to get all the miniatures that you need for whenever you wanted to play SFB. Now, if you have a certain fleet that you always fly, it's doable. But again, it's pretty expensive. And that was always the beauty of the counters, which, you know, they cost a bit, but, you know, they're not nearly as expensive as miniatures. Now,
oh, no, go on.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, okay. Okay, let's go for the last one, which is ADB just provides PDFs of the counter sheets and says, you're up to your own devices to figure out how you want to create counter sheets. And again, as you pointed out, that would be kind of a stopgap measure. Now, the question of that after that is it profitable for ADB to take those counter sheets, you know, the PDFs and so forth, obviously they have the originals themselves, and actually get, you know, a physical manufacturer that creates counter sheets to do it, and then sell those counter sheets after the sheets are available electronically? Will people still be interested in getting the heavy card stock? That would be my only question.
Well, the talk on the BBS seems to be that if the heavy card stock isn't done at the time the product is done, then it'll never get done afterwards. But a PDF is an option.
Well, the question is...
I'm just checking here because I'm looking at the 7,000 scale, and it's just in Safeways. So, say, for example, I'll say this to you as an Andromedan player. Now, I don't have the US dollar price.
Don't get me started.
Canadian dollars.
Oh, I love that stuff.
But, all right, I'll switch to US dollars. Just one second here. So, there are two main sprues in 7,000 scale for Shapeways for the Andromedans. And they usually come in the high-quality plastic, which is the really one you want anyway because it looks so good. Basically, the Casino. There's one pack that comes with an intruder, a conquistador, a bunch of about three satellite ships, and a satellite base. I think there's a Terminator. Actually, no, there's a Terminator modeler in there as well. And, oh, no, that's the Dominator. Oh, yeah, that's the intruder one. So for US dollars, that's $24.99 in the high-quality plastic. Mm-hmm. Because some of the 7,000 scales don't print too well in lower-quality plastic. And then if you look at the Dominator collection, it's $24.90. That is a Dominator, another satellite base, two Mambas, or two, three Mambas, a Python, or is that four Mambas? Anyway, so basically everything that you need to fill out a full, squadron, so to speak, of Andromedan motherships and satellite ships for $50. And that's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14 miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not as cheap as countersheets, but it's significantly cheaper than buying those 14 miniatures in even the classic 3788 scale.
Right.
Agreed.
Agreed. I think it's definitely a good idea. And I think it definitely will sell more miniatures. And the question, of course, then comes into being because in addition to getting the counters, the miniatures, most part, because the material, the plastics that are available are single color plastics. It's not like you can actually buy, say, okay, I want one single color plastics where, okay, I want red, I want my Andromedas to be green. Instead of the white plastic, I want, or whatever, gray, whatever the color is, it is, I want to be green. Because that's usually how they're painted.
Well, usually what happens is if a miniature is available on Shapeways in the standard plastic type, you can choose about 8 or 9 different colors, something like that. So you can have green or black or blue or gray, whatever you like. The difference is that the smooth, fine detail, because I keep thinking of the old, they used to call them frosted ultra detail miniatures, but it's the same design, but they now call it smooth, fine detail plastic. They're actually kind of translucent, so they're great for cloak ships. When you have the miniature in your hand, you can see sort of through it.
Right.
So,
oh, yeah.
I guess if you're a Romulan player, then that makes your life a lot easier. You just say, oh, they're cute. But for the Andromedan, that is true that if you basically buy the sprue of 7,000 scale, you have to basically, it doesn't give you the option. It gives you an option of doing them in gray for like a few dollars cheaper. But for the sake of that price, you'd be as well just get the best quality because, a few dollars extra and stuff. Okay. So, you will have to, but the thing is that usually, even for a Call to Arms Starfleet, there's no tournament set up where they penalize you for not having painted miniatures.
Agreed.
There are other games out there where they insist that you have to basically have everything painted up to like a high standard before they let you play. And, I'd be very surprised if there was an ADB a tournament like for an ADB game system that did that. It would be nice, but because I guess that's part of the thing when you play Call to Arms is that you want the miniatures, but it's different. I guess the key is to offer different speeds for people so that they can decide for themselves which would be the best way forward.
Oh, understood. But here's the point I'm trying to make, and that is, for the person who normally doesn't buy miniatures, and these miniatures are they're within price range that I can do. They say, you know, I'm willing to spend $60 or, you know, $60-$70 for my the empire that I like to play. Now, what I think would be kind of neat. Now, I understand that this is not from a painted miniatures perspective. Those miniatures people who like to have it painted and, you know, have all the stripes and all that kind of thing done, but more of an Axis and Allies approach. In that, each empire would have different, you know, this would be, you could have as a different color. For example, have all the Federation ships just coming out of the box just to be blue. The Klingons to be black. The Zinni being white. You know, the Andromas being green. Things like that where, you know, it's, or actually, no, Galactic Civilization, I think it might be a better, is that right? I think Galactic Civilization. I'm thinking about one of the board games. But the whole idea of each empire has a different color. So when you look on the board, you can tell, okay, which empire you are at. Now, that's a different approach to miniatures versus the way currently miniatures are thought of right now. Miniatures are totally thought of you get the miniature and then you paint it. And it looks beautiful. And I think, obviously, that there's a place for that. And people, you know, that gives a real visual feel of what the ship looks like. It looks really nice. You can be really proud of that and so forth. But I can see, you know, in my mind, a great market, especially for the come to 7,000 scale. If it was possible, I'm not sure it is possible because of it requires different, you know, because it's 3D printing, so it requires different stuff for each color. You know, and I'm not sure, you know, if it can still all provide the same level of details because it's probably a dye of some sort and so forth. But yeah, you know, I think that'd be a great idea if that was possible.
Are you on the Shapeways website right now?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so do me a favor. Go on the left side of the menu, where it says, you know, you can choose your empire or choose your scale or whatever.
Right.
And bring it down to 7,000 scale for a second.
Oh, there it is. Okay. Yep. 7,000 elite. Okay, there's 78.
All right. All right. Now, if you notice on there, you've got some of the pictures have like a blue background.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other ones have a gray background.
Right.
Okay, so the gray ones are the ones that can be cast in the cheaper plastic that you can choose the color for. And the so, for example, let's say if you pick the Neo-Tholian, there's one here, a 7,000 scale Neo-Tholian fleet core collection that gets you like a dreadnought and heavy cruiser and so forth. So enough to go around conquering a galaxy or a fleeing one. You know, so if you bring that page up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you bring that page up, then you actually have the option where you can choose. Oh no, it only has white. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, it's white and gray.
With the bigger scale finishers, you can choose a whole bunch of different colors. But it seems that for the 7,000, it's just white. So there goes my idea. Oops. But I guess a kind of spray paint could probably do the trick. I mean, it's not free, but agreed. It's still, yeah. But what's actually interesting as well is that I think we've mentioned this on the program before, but there's three tournament cruiser sprues in 7,000 scale as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one that has the Klingon, the Fed, and the KR. And then there's another one that has like the Andromedan, it has the ISC, Gorn, Xinti, Neo-Tholian, Archeo-Tholian, and Wynn Oxbox. And then there's another one that has the fish ship, LDR, Liren, Orion, and Hydron. So those products basically were created to try and encourage people doing tournament play which is something dear to your heart, of course, to be able to basically have them at a scale where they would be reasonable for people to basically, like, say, a group together could decide, like, if they're going to go, like, when people can go outside again, so things like Council on Five Nations, they can basically have a set like this that everyone shares. So you could basically have, like, say, a tournament where people agree that they'd have just one empire at a time. You wouldn't have too many duplicates. And then the minis are there for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like encouraging community play.
Right.
So it's not a case of, you know, I've got all these ships and you don't, so nya-nya. Which I suppose is kind of like, well, I mean, that's more of a call to arms kind of thing because you have to have the miniatures. But yeah, I mean, like for SFB or whatever like that, I mean, I think that, I think part of the issue as well is that not a lot of people know these miniatures exist. I mean, even after all this time, I mean, like it's, there's a lot of people that they're happy, they play tournament play or they play historical play or whatever they play, but they just don't keep up with what's going on with Shapeways, which is fine. But I guess what if more of those people would want to have this sort of thing if the news was made available to them? So, of course, that's one of the reasons why you run this podcast. But yeah, so I mean, like it's, like I very much doubt that there'll be like, you know, a magic button that someone will press and all of a sudden these things will fly off the shelves. But, you know, it's like 1,000 mini steps.
Mm-hmm. So. That would be interesting to see if that'd be possible.
So, yeah, I think I don't want to leave you up, keep you up too much later. But
Yeah.
Feel free to go and vote for X2.
I agree. I will look into it. Maybe I'll buy one of these tournament packs and just see, you know, what, you know, see if I can find some good spray paint for, you know, for when you coat miniatures. My guess is I probably have to at the very least put, I have to be careful about the coating. Because I know what happens. The layers of paint you put on a miniature, you lose definition. That's always the issue. But I'll see if maybe that's an idea. I'd like to see how that works out. Because as I said, I think if it wouldn't be that hard to create just. The miniatures, take the miniatures and just paint them one color. We don't care about definition. Don't care about how beautiful, you know, that they'll look and realistic and all that kind of thing. And more of, as I said, the Axis Allies kind of thing, where each empire versus, you know, I know Axis Allies is just each player, but the whole idea of each empire has its own color, that kind of thing. Because normally all the ships for the all the ships for one side are usually of the same empire. So,
and one final thing I'll say on the miniature side is, in case anyone is looking at the Shapeways site and wondering why certain ships are grouped together, it's because the sculptor who's designing these miniatures basically did all the tournament ships that for the empires that they've been creating for Shapeways.
Right.
So, for example, Steve Zamboni has been doing the Gorns and Gazintis and ISC and so forth. So, he put, that's the reason why the Gorns, because it's an ISC and so forth, are on the same sprue.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chris Nasipak is the one who's been doing the Orions and Lyrans and so forth, so that's why they're together. And of course, Will McCammon is the one who's been working on the Feds and Klingons and the Kestrels and so forth. So that's why those three miniatures are together. So even if they don't necessarily seem like... because I'm pretty sure, I don't know if I've heard it, but I think there's still a few tournament ships like the TKR and so forth that... haven't been done in 7,000 scale,
no.
But I suspect that
the TKR has been.
Oh, sorry, not the TKR, the TKE.
Yes, the TKE. That's
Or the Firehawk.
That's true.
So they happen to be done by Pat Lawson, the same guy who does so many of those great Omega ships. And so you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you know, some sort of collection for them appears and so forth. But I mean, I don't want to. That's just a speculation on my part.
Understood.
But yeah, so it's basically that just to help, you know, if anyone's wondering, like, you know, maybe they would have preferred a certain other combination of empires, like, you know, Fed Klingon Romulan and so forth. Like, by Romulan, I mean King Eagle rather than Kestrel. But that's basically, you know, that's because each of the designers is using their own software, and they don't always talk to each other pretty well. So,
understood.
That's pretty much like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you remember. I'm not sure if you were here or not when we had the all of the sculptors come and join us when Shapeways first, those miniatures were first put out. You know, that whole Shapeways effort started. You know, I remember having them on board, and each one saying, like, one used, I forget what, some Google sketch. It was a sketch or something. Some Google product, and each person uses different tools. Like, what? That's crazy. To me, that's crazy. I would think there would be a consistent product that you would use. You know, something like Adobe Photoshop. You know, that's what everybody uses for modifying images. You know, that's considered the standard. You know, even though you can use other products. You know. Anyway, we gotta shut down because Lord knows I gotta get some sleep. Well, Gary, it's been wonderful having you on, and you have a good night.
Same to you. Have a great night.
Okay, bye. So we had a nice little discussion there, talking about many things from different modules, which mainly focus on X2 and Exarchaelians. And, you know, about the Shapeways and the whole issue with counters, because Lord knows counters are expensive. They're not cheap, you know, and I know that there's still companies that will create the counters, because Lord knows there's still game board products that use that kind of technology for creating pieces, you know, and some really nice, you know, cutouts too. But, you know, the question is, can ADB afford having for those small little counters? You know, it's not exactly easy. And Lord knows, I know they've had issues in the past, which is, of course, quality control. You know, because that's always, you have to find a good shop that can produce a quality product that's consistent. You know, that the cut into the cardboard is along the lines of the images for the counters. Because I'm sure everybody's seen that whole issue sometimes, where it's not quite right, so it gets bleed over between the counters and the counter beside it, but it's good enough that, well, ADP lets it go for the most part, you know, or misses because it's just a little bit, you know. But anyhow, it's interesting to see what, you know, ADB brings us with the next module, you know, and what the future is going to be when it comes to new products from ADB. And with that, I bid you a good night.